1 second. Let me test. Testing 1, 2, 3. No, not working. That's odd.
It's working now, Roy.
Oh, okay. I don't know. Sometimes computers act in mysterious ways. Anyway, we're going to have a usual schedule. We'll ask for questions of a technical nature, preferably with amateur radio-related questions first, but we'll accept any questions of a science or technological nature. We'll try and do that for about until 10:15. Paul will come on with the SpaceNet report. That should take us to about 11 p.m., and I will return to tie a bow and everything and wish you well for coming week. So that's my plan. If the laws of physics continue, I continue to get Internet access and power and all kinds of fun stuff, and the repeater behaves as well. So that's our plan for tonight. Anyone out there with any questions or comments or topics for discussion tonight, again, preferably amateur radio related at first, please hit that push-to-talk button and your first name and your call sign. Gosh, the silence is deafening. Well, I don't know what to say, guys. This is not supposed to be a monologue. This is not supposed to be a broadcast. This is supposed to be a net. So, once again, if you have any technical questions or comments or topics that you'd like to bat around, please feel free, hit that push to talk, and give me your name and call sign.
Yeah, Roy, WBZ. I was thinking that I really don't know how a DMR hotspot works. I know that mine is constantly on. It doesn't waver at all, which is really nice. But I really don't know how it works. Can you enlighten me?
Certainly. Okay. One of my pet peeves is that they took the concept of hotspot from a larger hotspot device. I don't know if anyone remembers, but every so often when the cell phone generations jump up to the next one, they usually utilize higher frequencies with higher attenuation, which require more densely populated cell towers, which take time to be built out. So at one point or another, a lot of the cell phone providers offered what they called hotspots, which were kind of relay stations, personal local relay stations for people's business, office, and house. The idea being that you would plug this device into an Internet service provider network, and it would pick up signals from your cell phone on RF, translate them to digital bytes, and stream them through the Internet, and therefore you didn't need a nearby cell tower to make phone calls. When digital voice radio became a big thing, people kind of took that idea one step further, which was, okay, in order to get onto these digital gateways, usually you had to go through a repeater, but that kind of tied up the repeater for one person. So if one person wanted to talk to Lithuanians and went on a repeater and linked into a Lithuanian channel, the rest of the people who were serviced by that repeater were going to suffer hearing about Lithuania a lot. So people thought, wouldn't it be a nice idea if we do the same thing for gateways? And so the gateway hotspot was born. Let me drop for a sec. So the premise of a hotspot is to be your own personal repeater internet gateway. In other words, if you want to talk to Talk Group 99 and you don't want to tie up a repeater, you can do it locally, because a hotspot is often a red eye with a UHF hooked into it, and it will take your digitally encoded signals, because the big problem with digital voice is that you have to use a voice decoder, which is not in the public domain for the most part. So you would use your digital handy-talkie to encode it in the digital bits and be picked by the receiver portion of the Raspberry Pi's top hat, and then through some software, be translated and sent down the internet stream to servers on the internet, which provided gateways for DMR service, for D-Star service, and for Fusion service. Now that's just the touching the very top. And if you have any further questions, or if I haven't made anything too clear, please feel free.
Well, how is it working electronically? You key up your little transceiver and send a signal to the hotspot at a certain frequency, I guess. Do you know what frequency they turn at? Is it like 800 megahertz, something up there?
No, it's hotspots, like I said, they're Raspberry Pis, but usually they have a UHF, but sometimes I've seen UHF, VHF transceiver top hat that get plugged into the Raspberry Pi. You can set your Raspberry Pi, there's a setting on the software for what frequency you want it to use to receive and transmit. So most of them are UHF. You pick a UHF frequency that isn't in use. You don't require too much power. You know, microwatts will suffice because you're just operating at most from one room in your house to another. And it picks it up on UHF and VHF, but because you're sending hopefully very low signals and you're on a frequency that's not really used heavily by most local people, you're not going to get in trouble. So the Raspberry Pi picks up your UHF signal. It's already encoded in the binary signal of the protocol. If it's DMR, it's the binary protocol of DMR. If it's D-Star, it's a little bit different. And it takes that signal, and because you've also programmed what gateway you're interested in and what talk group you're interested in, you have to put that already into the software on the Raspberry Pi, it will know exactly where to direct those digitized packet signals to what server on the internet. And that's it. That's all that it is it's a relay between an RF source, which is your handy talkie, and the internet through your internet service provider.
And what are the decoding is done within the hotspot, right?
No, the decoding is totally not done with the hotspot. The problem, once again, is that the encoding and decoding of the binary voice encoder decoder is patented and copyrighted and all kinds of little things like that. So unfortunately, it has to be, the encoding takes place on your handy talkie when you transmit, and then when a packet comes back through the hotspot, it's sent on the top hat RF. It's transmitted to your handy talkie again. Your handy talkie's voice encoder decoder then decodes the bit stream back into phonemes and words that you can understand. So the actual voice encoding and decoding takes place on your handy talkie radio, which is why, generally speaking, you can't use a Fusion handy talkie radio to talk on D-Star.
And how does it end up TCP/IP?
That's what the Raspberry Pi is programmed to do. It will take the digital stream coming out of the transceiver portion, assumes is the audio portion, but I exactly don't know. It's a pin. It's you know, the voltage potential of one of the pins, and we'll send that as a bit packet, along with they'll load it with a bunch of other stuff as identifiers, so it will come back to your IP address to be decoded. But ultimately, it's just it's not terribly sophisticated. Encapsulate one data packet inside of a bigger data.
So the hotspot is like a transceiver itself. It both receives a signal and then transmits it to your router?
Yes, it is a transceiver on the top end, and the Raspberry Pi will do the magic of spraying it out as internet protocol packets on your internet connection and send it in the general direction of the server that's acting as the gateway for that particular talk group.
I see. Interesting. But it's your handy talky that's dictating what talk group you want to talk on.
Well, it depends upon how you configure the Pi Star. If you don't give the Pi Star what server you want to operate on, you know, which gateway and which of the servers on that gateway, then it'll have no idea. The only thing that the handy talkie is going to pass is just the talk group. So you have to supply which gateway you're interested in, and many gateways offer different servers throughout the world. So all the other stuff has to be configured via Raspberry Pi or Pi Star, or if you have OpenSpot, they have their own proprietary software that does that. So the only thing that the handy talkie packet includes is the talk group. They don't really specify the gateway that you're operating, because they were kind of designed back in the day that you would be using it to communicate with a local repeater. And repeaters only had one gate, so you didn't have to specify what gateway, just what talk group.
But how did they differentiate between like DMR and Fusion? Are they different frequencies or different, I guess, differences come about in the packet itself, is that right?
Well, I mean, the principal massive difference is you're sending it to a different server. So you've configured the Pi Star to send it to a Fusion Fusion Room, I guess. Although there's a lot of mishmash and a lot of times we use talk groups, all kinds of stuff. Nevertheless, you would have to send it to a server that does Fusion in order for it to expect Fusion. If you send it to DMR and it's a Fusion signal, it won't work for a bunch of different reasons in that the digital packets are not consistent with that protocol, among other things.
So what would be the difference between Fusion and DMR?
In the case of Fusion and DMR, the bit streams are different. The way that the people who developed them with a slightly different protocol, because there's nothing inherently consistent with packets. You got a better chance of translating DMR and Fusion than you do D-Star, because when D-Star was developed, they used a more primitive encoder-decoder. So if you use the encoder-decoder that's available for either Fusion or DMR on D-Star, it wouldn't work. It wouldn't translate correctly because it uses, and that's from the same manufacturer, just different versions of voice encoder-decoder. But, you know, they all have slightly different packets built into them, and the server software is different for each protocol.
Okay, so where does Brandmeister fit into the picture?
Brandmeister was one of the first DMR servers that were open to the public. Originally, only repeaters could access digital servers that make talk group connections. But Brandmeister was a third-party group. They built out their own server racks. It's all kind of freebies, somehow dedicated. A lot of guys spend their own money, maintain it, and such. So it's a kind of a parallel DMR gateway. And there have been other parallel gateways established, and invariably there are links between the legitimate original gateway and Brandmeister, and between other like TGIF and such that became separate gateways that operate parallel but but are interconnected with each other. Occasionally you will find nets that have such convoluted connection. They offer you a large number of different gateways, but they're kind of serial gateways in that it's not like a starfish where it just kind of breaks out into a bunch of separate gateways, but one gateway feeds another gateway, feeds another gateway, feeds another gateway. And occasionally when people do it that way, which is far easier, one or two of the gateways break down. You get this strange thing that people can, you can talk to them, but they can't hear you. And some of them do, but some of them don't. So that's kind of the nature. But it all started with Brandmeister, and then it's spread all over the place.
Yeah, in terms of it spreading all over the place, do you think it's more popular now than it was a few years ago or less?
I have very little to base this on, because it would be nice to actually have hard numbers. But my gut feeling is that, like most things, it kind of was a tiny new thing, and a lot of people played around with it, and I think people are playing around with it these days. I still use my connections for different purposes, mostly for networks, but, you know, when I listen around on the thought groups, rooms, or the reflectors, it seems to be a little bit less active than it was, so I think it kind of peaked. Surprisingly, there's yet another bunch of people who are coming up with another standard for digital voice. It's going to be open source, M17, I think. And I don't know, it kind of solves a problem that doesn't exist. You know, most people don't mind buying stuff, Fusion, DMR, D-Star, but their saving grace, they say, is they're open source, so we don't charge anything. So we'll see what they bring to the show. Nothing special that I can perceive as yet, but we'll see.
What's it called, N17?
I think it's 17. I think it's M. There might be another letter. It's not a terribly memorable protocol. If anyone out there would like to remind me if I got M17 right or if it's a little bit longer than that, please feel free.
US2N.
Yes, Paul.
Yeah, it's M17. And Limock had a good presentation on it. Somebody gave a presentation on that topic. And my guess is it's probably one of the topics on the Limock YouTube channel. So you can probably scan through, try to find out which one has the information about M17. It was a very good presentation. That's all I remember about it. Back to you, Roy.
Okay, very good. Yeah, I don't know. I think M17 is not the greatest name for a protocol, personally, but, you know, it's their protocol. They can name whatever they want. I know Kinect Systems, if people were really interested in DMR, the beginning for amateur radios, Kinect Systems started selling very inexpensive Chinese-made, usually mobile radios, and they prop in all in one, you know, one radio to rule them all, a digital radio that would be able to receive and transmit all D-Star Fusion and DMR, and they never pulled it off. So they're sort of trying again. And because the guy is a glutton for punishment, he's including M17. So every so often I get weird little emails from him explaining why it might take a few more years to get everything done, and they're having problems with copyright issues and such, because the company that owns aspects of the voice encoder decoder, we really want a lot of money from a lot of people.
It would be in ham radio's best interest to come out with transceivers that can handle it all. Because I think that traffic is falling off precipitously on DR anyway, on Brandmeister. And I guess people are just getting used to talking to somebody in Indonesia. I get more satisfaction out of speaking to somebody in Virginia over my magnetic loop than I do speaking to someone in China off of DMR.
A2, yes. Yeah, I think a lot of people feel the same way as you. I've heard a lot of people that this is ham radio type stuff. You know, whatever amuses people, so be it. M17 isn't going to really change anything about using one radio to rule them all. In point of fact, actually, and I don't want to sound like I'm selling a product, although I own it and I paid for it and I like it, OpenSpot's latest version of hotspots have built-in voice encoder decode chips. So it is possible by controlling the software that's a web-based software, you can use any handy talkie that's digital to talk to any other digital handy talkie. It'll decode it and then re-encode it to the proper version. So you can do that with hotspots now. So it's not quite as important as it once was to be able to do it with radios. Because I think the overwhelming amount of digital voice traffic takes place not on repeaters, at least not judging from the minuscule amount of repeaters out there that are active, but through hotspots. So it's kind of already been done, but I don't think it's sufficient to change anyone's mind. It's kind of a thing that you do. You say, oh, that's interesting, and then you do something else because there's no real challenge involved. It's just a matter of getting the programming right, you know. Code plugs have driven more than a few hams a little bit crazy. When it comes to DMR, especially during the early years, one of the most frequently asked questions I got in email was, do you know where I can get a code plug for DMR? That's kind of died down entirely. I think it's because most people don't care anymore, but I could be wrong.
I'm afraid to look at my code plug. It's been so long since I've had to wrestle with it. I don't know if I'd remember how I did it. It's been that long. It's probably been about 4 years since I looked at a code plug, or maybe longer, maybe five. So I just don't. I listen 991 once in a while, and you know I hear the same things over again. And what's confounding to me is that people just exchange call signs and weather and location, and then they get off. Then they get on to the next one, and I just don't see the purpose. Even 93 isn't really a red chewing channel. I wonder if there's a channel that is doomed for guys who get on and can stay on the channel talking to each other for as long as they want. Try that on 91 or even 930 and you're admonished very quickly. I don't get it.
Well, I think the problem with 91 and 93 is it's kind of a gateway all-in-one talk group, just that has a lot of small, short conversations. And I think it's the same way for UHF, VHF that has frequencies that you can make a contact, a direct one-to-one contact. But the idea is you either put very short or you use it as an introduction to decide upon another frequency or another talk group to have a somewhat long-winded conversation. So I think that's what's going on with 91 and 93. But I don't think for the most part anyone uses it for anything. They just use it to kind of waste some of their time. You know, hello, how are you? I just had a great lunch. The weather it's raining there. Well, thanks for the contact. Good on the contest. And, you know, on to the next. A lot of conversations, unfortunately, somewhat devoid of anything but small talk. If there's a magic channel that has no small talk and a lot of interesting conversation, I don't know it. Except that, you know, again, I hunt out and find a net. You know, like the Nets friend AB6MB, who has the Papa Network antenna net every Friday night at 10 p.m. And it's fun to listen to his net, but, you know, because there's no small talk, they're talking about antennas. So, you know, if you stick to nets, I think you got a slightly better chance, whereas if you just are looking for a talk group or a fusion room or a reflector, that people by a whole bunch of great conversational people, you know, like, you know, a whole slew of Buckleys and you know, guys chatting using polysyllabic words, you're not going to find them.
I just don't understand why I never hear two guys meet up on 91 or 93 and then say, let's QSY to 98 or 97 or whatever, 101. I never hear them say, let's move to a different talk group to continue the conversation. They just say hello and goodbye.
Well, I mean, that point, they have no basis for knowing whether either has anything interesting to say to the other, because they haven't said anything interesting to the other. You know, if you land upon some kind of a random chat room type of thing, and someone is just kind of telling you what the weather and what he had for lunch, you said that, you know, there's not much to go on with. You know, if on the other hand, he wants to talk philosophy with you and you're in such a mood, then you can take it to a side room and discuss all manner of things. Once on this repeater years ago, I found myself curiously discussing philosophy just because it got brought up somehow and we just went with it. And it was fun. But you don't see that most. Most of the time you tune in, it's about, hey, you remember that corner deli that was torn down 30 years ago? And the other guy says, yeah, that was a great deli. You know, not much you can do with that kind of a conversation, in my humble opinion.
I don't hear that. I just hear guys like identifying themselves where the QTH is and what the weather is, basically, and that's it. Then bye bye. Again, I don't get it. And again, I guess I'm saying this for the third time. Why I don't hear two guys, you know, hook up and then say, let's move to talk group 203. Why I don't ever hear that is confounding to me. Anyway, that's about it, Roy. Thanks for answering about the hot spots. I have a better idea now how they work. Back to you, W2BC.
Okay, Paul recognized. I'll get to you, Paul, in a second. I was just saying that's kind of the usual background conversation you sort of hear on repeaters these days. You know, people have a tendency to talk a little bit longer on repeaters than they do on digital voice hotspots. So you get the kind of reminiscences and the local escapes because obviously repeater conversations are much more local than hotspot ones, where you could be anywhere in the world. In hotspot ones, there's no tendency to kind of make a conversation anything longer than hello goodbye. So a lot of conversations end up being hello and goodbye. And if the conversation both ends is devoid of any topic of interest, I can certainly identify that they're trying to get rid of the conversation. A lot of times they'll make stuff up and they'll say that they have to go to the groceries or they have to go to the bathroom or they have to go someplace. But all intents and purposes will make really rapid, banal contacts on voice, digital, and then quickly, and probably not really be interested in talking to that other guy any longer than the 10 seconds that they spent. Anyway, Paul, you wanted to say something?
Yes. Well, I just wanted to confirm that the M17 presentation is still on the Lawnmark YouTube channel. It's a 42-minute presentation, and you just look up 17. It's called the M17 Project, and you'll find it right away once you go to Lawnmark.org. Back to you, Roy.
Okay, so I'll have to check that out one of these days. But again, you know, based on my understanding of the project, it's primarily nothing really new except it's open source as opposed to proprietary, which I understand how that makes it different, but since it's taking so long for it to come out, by now everyone has the proprietary option, so I'm not quite sure what the non-proprietary option is going to do for the field. You know, it's kind of like reinventing the wheel. In my humble opinion, maybe I'm missing some important aspect of M17, so I'll have to take a look at it one of these days. Okay, that's a very interesting audio stream. I couldn't make any voice out of it. So if there's someone out there trying to interact here on the Weimar Technical Net, maybe readjust your dials and your antenna and give it another try. Sorry, it's 99% noise, so I don't know what to tell you. You might need to give it more power. You might need to take it outside if it's mobile. You might want to try Echolink. We do have Echolink available. We have All-Star available. We have IRLP available. So there's more than one way to skin a cat. So I'd look into your options, because right now I can't even figure out if there's a voice connected to it. It's just a curious combination of noise.
It sounds like some kind of skip is happening.
Well, it might be skip. Wouldn't be the first time. But, you know, can't really tell one way or the other. Usually the only way I can tell if it's skip is if the call sign identifier identifies it as a repeater out of the area. So I'm not quite sure what it might be. Anyway, back to the Weimar Technical Net. I continue to be AC2GS, and this continues to be the Weimar Technical Net. So if anyone out there has any comments to make about what we were discussing before, or has a new topic, new question, please feel free, hit that push to talk.
Yeah, hi, this is AC2GSA. I was wondering, what's the DMR? Is that a... about digipeaters, or is that another type of radio that has digipeaters?
Your signal's a bit noisy. If you can kind of boost anything, boost your audio, boost your output. I couldn't fully understand the question. It sounded like you were talking about DMR.
Hey, this is a KE2DFA. I was indoors, this way you can hear me. But is EMR and digipeaters the same thing, or is a digipeater a different topic?
Yeah, digipeaters is a different thing.
And I was wondering, what exactly is a digipeater? Because I was looking into them, and I don't fully understand them either.
Okay, a digipeater is sort of a digital repeater in that it doesn't repeat voice. It is more focused of repeating packet data. So, you know, things sort of like APRS or WinLink, those sort of protocols are similar to digipeaters.
Okay, so if I wanted to send someone a picture or something, I could use a digipeater, or if I wanted to send somebody like a sound to play.
Okay, my All-Star link kind of failed towards the end. But I think I got the gist of the question. Yeah, it would be more for text-based or images and such as opposed to hotspots that are primarily designed for voice-encoded digital streams.
Okay, I understand that.
Okay, thanks for participating. Once again, if anyone out there has any questions or comments or topics for discussion. The night is relatively young. I understand that this is Memorial Day weekend, and I'm sure a lot of people are took today off along with tomorrow, and they're enjoying themselves doing something other than listening and talking on radios, but the show must go on, so if anyone's out there with something, feel free, hit that push to talk.
I'm just curious, like, let's say if I'm in the middle of nowhere, like, if I'm, like, going mountain climbing one day, and I want to get internet up there, is there, like, a ham radio that something like that?
Well, Charlie doubled with you, so hello, Charlie. There's a bunch of different options, none of them terribly good, because the problem is that you need a second half. Where are you going to, you know, I mean, if you have a mesh network, there's a bunch of different ways of sort of doing it, but not on a mountaintop. There is something called Meshtastic, which is a bunch of Wi-Fi-enabled devices that interconnect with each other and then feed into the to the internet. So it's a means of sending things on RF and having them eventually show up on the internet. But mesh networks require a grid work of small SDR Wi-Fi dongles. Covering a certain area that has some access to the internet. But the problem with your situation would be you need to transmit a signal to a place that has an internet access, which is a big problem. HF is not really going to do that. And you can hook things up like WinLink protocols in which you can send emails, maybe, depending upon how receptive the base location that's hooked up with a WinLink and an internet protocol. But, you know, just to be able to pull out some RF device that connects as a hotspot directly to the internet, not really. You know, I mean, there are little fudges. There is the, you know, the satellite cell phones that can be tapped into doing something at very low bid rates. They're working on stuff with Starlink. But other than those types of protocols, to my knowledge, there's nothing great in the ham world that will give you internet access on a mountaintop. Any response? Okay, I guess no response. Charlie, you doubled with the other gentleman. I assume that it was just the usual hello, I'm here. If not, if you have a question, please feel free.
Yes, I just wanted to tell you I went to the air show today in Long Island, and I enjoyed myself watching the old birds fly.
Ah, very good. I'm glad you enjoyed yourself. They used to do, well, I don't know if it's a similar show, but they used to do an air show, you know, I don't remember if it was the Navy or the Air Force, right off Company Island. I live only about less than a mile away. I used to take those shows in regularly. Used to try and snap a lot of telescopic pictures of that. So I hope you had a really fun time.
I didn't need a telescopic lens. I could have reached out. I was so close. The only thing separating me from the plane taking off was the fence.
Okay, but I wasn't really talking about the ground. I was talking up in the sky.
Okay.
Okay. Once again, I continue to be AC2GS. This continues to be the Limark Technical Net. We're open for business. So if anyone has any questions or comments or topics that they would like to either discuss or hear discussed, please hit that push to talk.
WR2K with a question.
Sure.
I got to take in the air show today from the beach, fighting the lines and the parking and everything that goes with it, but that's another story. So I brought an MT-65, the Yaesu, the handheld there, which has FM, so I could get updates from the DJ. Silly me thought I might have wideband coverage on there to hear maybe the AirBoss or something like that. So, what's your favorite HT that goes down that low, around the 130s? I think there are some handhelds that do that. So I'm taking votes for favorites there that have that just go a little wider on the receive.
Okay, well, I'll throw it out to the audience. I haven't really looked up specs of handy talkies lately. Anyone have any good answer for you? By the way, just looking up your QRZ, I see that you own a Flex. I have a Flex. I love my Flex. But anyway, anyone out there with any handy talkie expertise out there? Yeah, I was afraid of that, Kevin. Yeah, our audience is kind of in a lull tonight. I'm sorry I can't really help you with that, but just you know, for my own entertainment, what model Flex radio do you got?
I have the 63. There was a deal, and I grabbed it. So I realize it's usually meant with, oh, yeah, the entry-level one. But pretty happy with it, you know. I only have 2 years. It's got two slices. So you can actually put one... and one in your right, so that actually does work out well. Yeah, pretty happy with it, actually. I could talk forever with that. So it's got a tuner built in, and thanks to the last firmware upgrade, and only, I think, well, not the last, but only with a more recent firmware upgrade did the tuner really start working great, not before it. But other than that, it's good. Mine is... I don't know, what do you have?
Right, for this side?
I have the 6700. There's another person who wanted to say something?
Good evening, gentlemen. Victor Kilo 3, Foxtrot Yankee 4W2, Merrick. The chap was asking about a handle with wider front end. I'm currently running an FT5DR. It has coverage of between 140-odd gigs on AM, but I'm not sure if that's going to be good. I think a lot of the modern handhelds have the capability, but they're probably a little bit more of IPR, over.
Okay, very good. Kevin, did you get that?
Actually, I'm in the car. The audio was a tad on the low socket for coming back. And he recommended or mentioned which one would be up my alley?
Could you repeat the model?
The Fox Tango 5 Delta Radio, the FT5DR. And probably a few others that have it as well. But it covers the 130-odd megahertz band, but in the AM mode only, over.
Okay, did you get that, Kevin? He said the FT5DR.
DR, thank you. All right, I'm going to have to take a peek at that. And, yeah, appreciate that. Yeah, we'll see how that one... I know there's a new, like, a bow-style thing. I'm not interested. I've done plenty of this about things. I don't want to go watch the thing and go down that rabbit hole. So, but 67 is, you know, until about 5 minutes ago was... best. But I know that it ranks at many a receiver. So that's very good. Mine, if it's a breaker or gripe, is that to get an extra microphone on or an XLR, it seems like you have to jump through hoops. I haven't gotten, I'm thinking about moving on to it.
I don't know. Tonight the repeater is very, 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 very noisy. And I'm not even really using the repeater. I don't know exactly. Reception is seems to be a problem with just about everyone tonight.
Am I in the wrong machine? 47.35, which is that a mystery?
Say again, I couldn't quite make out what you were saying.
I'm going into eastern Long Island, and I should be looking west now that I'm on the one called Parkway.
Okay, now, you know, I mean, it's still kind of spotty, but, you know, what can you do? Radio waves do what they want to do. Anyway, maybe some other time when you're in the base station or repeaters, we could have a little chat about SDRs. I really like mine. I have a C700. I bought it about 8 years ago. They stopped making them. They just announced a new line, their 8000 series. So the 6400 and the 6600 is going to be, I guess, replaced by 8600s and 8400s. I wish they would update the firmware more frequently, hopefully with the new set of SDRs. That'll give them some motivation to go from SSDR 3.x to 4.x, and maybe they'll throw in some new features. We'll have to see. But thanks for participating tonight. I just wish the signal was a little bit better. Now, once again, I continue to be AC2GS. This continues Line Mark Technical Net. Very reminiscent of my 10-meter net this morning, in which, despite the fact that we're not supposed to be in sunspot minimum, propagation conditions are awful. There was two guys having a chat off to the right of me on my fan adapter, but my DX station was at a station coming out of New Jersey to give you an idea of what the propagation conditions were this morning. Nevertheless, propagation conditions shouldn't be that bad here now. I'm assuming that one of our little problems is Memorial Day weekend, and a lot of our usual participators are off having fun doing something else somewhere else. Nevertheless, we're still open for business, so if anyone is out there and has a question or a comment or a topic for discussion, please hit that push to talk.
WS2N.
Yes, Paul.
Yeah, I was thinking about a halfway vertical. You know, I know Gapit makes it. But Comet also has one. And I think DX Engineering has it. I couldn't find it on ham radio. But anyway, it's supposed to cover, you know, all bands, you know, 6 through 80. So, you know, it's vertical with no radials. I'm just wondering if this thing, you know, if you could put this on a piece of pipe coming out of the ground, you know, even a couple of feet off the ground, or does it really have to be elevated? Is this something that should put on, you know, you should put on a tower or something? Like, can you really just out of the ground with these things? That I couldn't find. I searched that on the internet as well. You know, or you know, are they up in the air, or can I actually put this on the ground? I mean, it sounds like the way to go. You know, you're not going to get out as good as maybe some of the other antennas that you could buy, but, you know, to cover bands, it sounds good to me anyway. Including 80. Back to you.
Okay, the big question is, how does it do a magic thing like that? Because basically a center-fed dipole operates about the same no matter how you orient it. So you can't take a center-fed dipole and have it operate very nicely through harmonics that well. You know, sometimes you kind of put it through some kind of very lossy
lost it, Roy.
WS2N. This is AE2AJU.
Yeah, how you doing? We're just waiting for Roy to come back.
Sometimes he loses the link. How you doing, Charles?
I'm doing fine. Well, we lost him on the channel.
Yeah, I know. He goes through, he's gone through a Wall Star, one of them. He's got a lot of capabilities. You know, he'll figure it out. Should be no problem. He'll be back. He's got a weird location. He just uses his 2-meter radio. That's hit and miss into the repeater. So he usually goes through the digital. Well, stand by. ACPS WS2N. You're back, Roy.
Hopefully, yes, I'm back. I'm sorry about that. All Star really, I think it was my computer clock that hooked up to All Star. It locked itself up, and I just had to kill it. And hopefully, you hear me using good old RF.
Hey, you're doing good. Yeah, you're just a little lower. I just make my volume louder. But yeah, I got every word, Roy. Back to you.
Okay, very good. This is AC2GS. Like I was trying to say before, I noticed that my signal wasn't going anywhere. Theoretically, the polarization angle of a centipede dipole should have the same properties. So if you could do multiband with a vertically oriented centipede dipole, you should be able to do it with a horizontal, which you really can't. So there's some other magic going on in that design. It might be a very lossy balun that confuses your SWR meter into saying it's not reflecting a lot of power. I don't know. But theoretically, you should be able to orient it in a vertical orientation and not worry too much about ground coupling. You don't want to have one of the legs touch the ground, but as long as you keep it a couple of feet off the ground, it should work fine as a vertically oriented centipede dipole. That'll give you a great signal for the primary harmonic, but the higher harmonic, again, I'm curious how they finagle with a centipede dipole other than just in the polarization angle.
Yeah, I didn't look up the... I wasn't going to talk about this for a while. So I'm not planning on getting it for a while, but you know, we had some time, so I figured I'd see if you knew anything about this thing. It's a one transformer, you know, where you tie the coax into it, and they claim that it'll do all the bands, you know, all the HF bands. You know, the gap antenna is supposed to do it, but this one's a lot less money. And I heard the instructions on putting gap together was not all that good, not that clear. So I'm trying to avoid any kind of headaches. And this thing is supposed to be, you know, a kit. You know, so we'll see. I'll look it up. Maybe I can find it on the internet again. You know, I'm not even sure if the Comet is still being sold. It was in my earlier QST, but now I see it's not. Now it looks like they're just selling 2-meter, 440, you know, antennas like that. But they did have this one. And it was, you know, I mean, it's not cheap. I think it was 400 plus. But I don't know. I'll look into it. Back to you.
Okay. The Comet, was that the 158?
Yeah, I got it. I'll look it up again. I really forgot. It's the only HF vertical antenna made by Comet and that I've seen. All the other ones are, you know, for VHF and UHF. So I'm starting to wonder maybe they don't sell it anymore. These are the advertisements that I was looking at. I don't see it in the latest QST. We'll see. No, look, I hate to go with a gap. I heard it's a complicated headache, you know, and technical support isn't there. You know, far and few between, anyway, if you call them. Back to you, Roy.
KCDGS. I mean, it's technically much more sound, but the mechanics of tuning it correctly can drive one crazy. The Comet, if they discontinue the 158, they probably should have. This is not a documentation out there. People have pointed thermal recorders at the transformer and found that the thing lit up like a 75-watt light bulb. I think the magic trick that took place with the Comet was, as I mentioned earlier, it's a very, very lossy balanced transformer. So a lot of the power never gets reflected back to your SWR meter, and it reads as though you're doing great when you're doing not so great. So the problem is there's no free lunch. So if you want a multi-band antenna that doesn't require any kind of tuning up, there's not that many. Even something relatively simple like a fan dipole should really be tuned in position. Have the lengths adjusted, and then they change the coupling of the other leads, so that needs to be adjusted. So a just plug-and-play multi-band antenna is very, very few and far between.
Yeah, I was afraid of that. Okay. You know, the dipoles all have spoiled. You know, I've used it in so many different bands. Just using dipoles, you know, regular halfway, halfway dipoles. Yeah. Some spoiled, you know. No problem with that, you know. And then, like the Comet, you can only put up, you know, if you put an amplifier on it, you're not gonna, you know, you'll burn it up. Dipoles, you know, halfway dipole. Yeah, I can put a full gallon into it and really not worry. As far as tuning it up, I just set it for the low part of whatever frequency I'm at. Like I have an 80 dipole at 134 feet. I'm a little shorter because I wanted, you know, I concentrate mostly on the W and the low end of 80 meters. And the same with 40. Well, 40 is different. I did wind up getting the junior, G5 above the junior, and supposedly does a bunch of bands, but I can only confirm 40 because my radio, my radio shot, I'm only doing 40 and 80, so I have to wait until I get another radio to eventually confirm that the G5 RV junior does what it's supposed to do, supposedly 10, 15, and you know, the walk bands up to 40. Time will tell. Although I did get it on 30. Correction, I did use that on 30. That was okay. Anyway, back to you, Rick.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, center-fed dipoles are very efficient devices. The only thing that might dissipate some resistive heat and limit the amount of power is the thickness of the wire. It's a reasonable thickness, you don't have to worry about it. So the problem with something like the 158 is because it's such an inefficient, energy-losing device that if you put a, 100 watts into it, maybe about 80 watts gets burned up with the transformer. And if you put 1,000, then 800 watts, that's a lot of power for that transformer to dissipate its heat and not start to melt. So be wary of structurally strong-looking antennas that have very limited power allowances. It means that there's something very inefficient online that's going to not a lot of power getting sent into your RF. So, I have to check again if Comet is still selling the 150. I hope they're not, because I thought it was a really terrible design, and a lot of people who took them apart felt the same way.
Okay, very good. I'm glad I asked. I don't want to go chasing rainbows, but very good. We'll turn over to you, Roy. I will definitely think about it. I'm still happy with my dipoles, you know. And luckily, my land is big enough where I can go diagonally and put an 80-meter dipole up. 160 is out of the question, but I do 80 really well back here.
Ah, very good.